You're in Braves country.
Hello, Braves country. How the hell are you? Hope everybody's getting ready for Christmas. And man, what is the deal with all the damn birthdays that hang around Christmas? I opened up my Facebook, was it yesterday? I believe it was. And including my wife's birthday, there were six other people who were born on that day celebrating their birthday. I was like, my God, what the hell's going on? Let me see. March, December. Are we trying to tell ourselves that these are St. Patrick's Day babies? Something's going on. I mean, my God. I always knew that September was a popular month because it's right after New Year's Eve, and it's one of the more populated months. It's when my birthday is, and I've always noticed a lot, but I've never really thought about December. But man, all right, let's get rolling. We got so much to get into in a little time. We're going to keep this one pretty tight today. First of all, Kevin Seitzer. If you did not see the news, Kevin Seitzer, the Braves hitting coach, he gets a round of applause today. Kevin Seitzer wins Major League Baseball Coach of the Year. Now, that's not the manager of the year, but what it means is that he was the top coach, the non-manager, right? So, and I think we all know why he won. I'm sure he's going to tell you he had nothing to do with it. But when you put out an offense that was record-breaking, record-shattering, you're going to tend to win the Coach of the Year. So congratulations to Kevin Seitzer. And I'm really surprised more folks have not come to him for head coach managerial positions. But hey, hopefully he'll stay under the radar. It's going to be a little more difficult for him to stay under the radar now that he's won Coach of the Year, but hopefully he does for a little bit. I'm getting some really bad weather outside, so hopefully I don't lose you. But if I do, if we lose power, that's what happened. All right. The other thing of note that I thought this was pretty cool news. Noticed this today, and I was like, man, we got to talk about this. So March 14th through the 17th, during Major League Baseball spring training, all 30 teams are set to assemble their top 20 to 25 prospects. It's totally up to the team itself. And you probably don't even realistically have to put that many together, but they want them on display. Top 20 to 25 prospects, and they are going to go up against other teams. Now, this could be something down the road where they're going to actually keep up with who wins and loses and whatnot, but this isn't something goofy like the NBA play-in tournament. This is what it is. It's a showcase for the fans midway through spring training to be able to see the top prospects in your organization all on the field. And you kind of get an idea of what, when you're because we read up on all these kids, we see video on all these kids, but they're usually, you know, small clips. But this is going to be a game that every team is going to play at least one game. They said a few of them will have to play two just to make the numbers work. I don't really know why that's, well, never mind. I do know why. I was about to say there's an even number of Major League Baseball teams, but you don't have the even number in the Arizona and the Grapefruit League. So basically, they want to make sure that every team gets a chance to do it twice. Now, they have not released the schedule yet. Once they do, we'll let you know. We are planning on carrying that game. We just have to wait for the schedule. And if there's some other intriguing games, we might carry them for other squads. If you have some highly rated prospects, et cetera, et cetera. So looking forward to that. Like I said, that's going to be March 14th through the 17th. They're going to be scattered. They've already announced one of the games is going to be on MLB Network. I really wish I could remember what teams they were. I want to say it was the Twins. I honestly don't remember, but it wasn't the Braves, so I didn't jot it down. So it'll be a four-day event. And now, yes, there will continue to be spring training games for the veterans, but they're specifically putting those together. So basically, everybody does this all throughout spring training. We have a split squad scrimmage. It's going to be like a split squad, but specifically on those days, you are only going to have on those squads your top prospects versus their top prospects. And so we look forward to that. I can't wait to see the schedule. I can't wait to see who we go up against, and should be a lot of fun. And I love the fact that they're doing it midway through, because you're not messing up the beginning of it. Beginning of spring training, most of these guys are only going to go one inning as it is. And if you wait till the end, you're trying to figure out who's going to make the team and whatnot. You don't need that junking it up. So I love the idea of it, and I love the fact that they're going to do it in the middle of spring training. It's going to be a seven-inning game, too, to note. Seven-inning game. I really do think we're going to start going towards seven-inning games in spring training more and more. Remember, that was an option a couple of years ago during the pandemic and right outside the pandemic. And it sounds like more and more you're going to start. And you know what? I'm for it. We don't need nine-inning games in spring training. I mean, for that matter, the National Football League, why the hell are they playing four full quarters in their preseason game? Why does the NBA play full quarters? I like the idea of shortening it. Honestly, the NBA ought to go to, you know, 8 to 10 minute quarters. I would almost say go to like a college basketball first half and second half, but I'm sure that they want to separate themselves from that. And, you know, hockey, why not play just two periods instead of three? Because the whole key to these spring training, preseason games, whatever the sport is to get guys loose, get them ready, but you don't want to get them hurt. All right, other things that are circling around in not just Braves country, but in Major League Baseball, man, it's ramping up, and it's seeming more and more likely that Tyler Glasnow could be heading to the LA Dodgers. And, you know, this phony baloney nonsense that went on, and I'm not dogging Dodger players. I'm not dogging Dodger fans. A little bit goes to the Dodger front office, but they're just taking advantage of this loophole. This really goes to Major League Baseball and the fact that they need to fix the fact that you should not be able to do what Ohtani did with his contract. For those who aren't familiar with what I'm talking about, most of y'all do know, the short of it is he's getting two a year, and then when he leaves, he's going to get 68 a year on the back end. So it's a 20-year contract, $2 million for 10 years each, and then 68 for 10. Now, regardless, we talked about this on the last time, but regardless what you hear, they will be hit for 46 this year on the cap. So it's not like, or the CBT, as they like to call it. So it's not like he's only going to hit two. It's still not genuine. It should still be the full 70, but I digress. But it looks like, so because that was allowed, Tyler Glasnow is set to make $25 million this year, and now they'll be able to sneak that under. They are also in talks with Yamamoto. And I saw an article, you know, this never comes out this way, but this is what they were throwing out there, is the possibility that you could have Yamamoto and Glasnow both acquired by the Dodgers, right? And then Yamamoto's obviously would be a long-term deal. Now, he has till January 4th to decide. So we're going to be hearing all this Yamamoto stuff for the next 2-3 weeks. But Glasnow gets $25 million, and then he'll be a free agent, which means they can have him go kick rocks, right? Because Ohtani would be in the rotation next year. And it makes a lot of sense, but it's crooked the way Major League Baseball has set it up. Because once again, I'm not going to dog the Dodgers or the Dodger players that took advantage of it or the fan bases. You can't go at them. You got to go at Major League Baseball. They're the ones that didn't have the four. I mean, I would have never thought that this would even be an option. not for this draft. Basically, what they need to do is they need to lay out that X percent has to be paid per year, and you cannot kick. I mean, a guy's making $70 million, and he's gonna kick 68 out there. It's, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's the whole damn contract, and that shouldn't be allowed. And when it goes on to the CBT number, it should be the whole damn number as it equals each and every year. But once again, you can't blame the Dodgers. You can't blame Ohtani. You got to blame Major League Baseball for allowing this nonsense to happen. And I would think at the next CBT, and just get ready for this, the next CBT, the Players Union is going to shut this down, because they don't like the idea of setting the precedent that their players could get screwed, because these young guys, even with the agents, but not every agent is shrewd, these young guys with the agents can get tricked into something like this, and the Players Union is going to look at it as, this is not good for the game. This is not good for their players and the almighty dollar. And so, with all that being said, they've got to address it and shut it down. Now, players that are involved with Glasnow, it seems like the Dodgers moved to the forefront. There's still a couple of others that are mulling around. Yamamoto would obviously be the next big guy. Now he's actually the number one fish everyone's trying to get. But Yamamoto, it's being portrayed as it's between the Dodgers and the Yankees. Now, I find that interesting, because I really thought the Mets were going to go all in. Hell, Steve Cohen, the owner, flew to Japan. So why are you flying to Japan if you're not going all in? Obviously, he didn't wow him, whether it was the dollar amount, the years, whatever it was. So there's still other teams in the mix. There's Toronto. They're saying Philadelphia. I'm not buying that one. I do buy the Toronto, because they were so close to landing Ohtani. They want a big fish in this market. I'm a little surprised that they're going all in on a pitcher. I would have thought that they would have pivoted to a hitter. Bellinger and Jorge Soler make the most sense for the Blue Jays. But right now, the rumor is that they are kicking the tires pretty hard on Yamamoto. But for whatever reason, and granted, we get these articles from the different outlets, and half the time, these outlets are coming out of New York and out of Los Angeles. So when someone tells me the Dodgers and the Yankees are the front runners, I don't necessarily say that they're wrong, but I do wonder how accurate they are. Red Sox are involved. Giants are involved. The Giants they're swinging a miss on everything. Now, they did get Young-Ho Lee from the KBO. It was a six-year, $113 million deal. And they're rumored to be in on Yamamoto. They're rumored to be in on a couple of guys from overseas. But I don't believe that you're looking at San Francisco being a realistic landing point for Yamamoto, because it's funny. Ken Rosenthal was talking about this yesterday, and he wouldn't say it, but you know what he was thinking. He said, for whatever reason, San Francisco doesn't seem to be a place where players are looking to move to, and he was skating around it. And of course, it all comes down to a couple of things. A, the crime rate has turned into a disaster in that city. B, it is extremely expensive to live in that city. And why do you want to pay extra to live somewhere where the crime rate has shot through the roof? And then C, because they're having a hard time landing free agent player A or B, C doesn't necessarily want to go there because they want to win. So San Francisco is having a hard time, and it all comes down to their local government. But Rosenthal didn't want to get in the weeds on that, and I get that he didn't want to get canceled and all that stuff, but I'm going to call a spade, and we know why it's happening. And the Giants, look, Oakland's already taken off out of that area. I don't think the Giants are in any kind of a threatening position to leave. nor the 49ers, but you got to keep an eye on it. Because if your city goes to crap, one of the first things that is a sure sign is when a team gets up and moves out of there. It happened to St. Louis in the 90s. St. Louis was turning into a war zone, and the Rams wanted to get the hell out of there. Now, they've done some things to help bring St. Louis back a little bit, but they still haven't brought an NFL team back. The Cardinals will never leave because the Cardinals have been there for that long. But anyways, it's interesting that you keep seeing the Giants being mentioned, but until they get that big fish, I will be absolutely shocked if they actually pull it in. I'm looking at Yamamoto. I still think the Mets have a decent shot. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. They got the money to back it up. They talked about how Yamamoto wants to play on a team where there's possibly another Japanese player. Now, that's why people start shading it towards the Dodgers. But remember, Kodai Senga came from the Japanese league as well. I don't know what their relationship is, or if they're good friends or not, but that could be an option there. What is interesting on San Francisco with the Young Ho Lee, they are in deep talks, and it looks like it might get done. Matt Chapman might be heading to the Giants. And that might be what the Giants have to do. They have to pivot to, we can't get Aaron Judge. We couldn't get Aaron Judge. We couldn't get Shohei Ohtani. There's been a number of free agents. They have fallen flat on their face, and they've put the money up there. We couldn't get the Carlos Correa deal done. Well, maybe we have to pivot, and we have to get to that ring just below it. And Matt Chapman, and he's got a previous relationship with the new skipper there in San Francisco, played for him for 5 years. So we keep an eye on that. I do believe we're going to get a lot of movement in the next 7-8 calendar days. And then you're going to see it hit kind of, you know, the quiet zone during the Christmas break, and then it'll come back rocking and rolling again in early January. Shohei Ohtani's press conference today, by the way, is at 6:00. Wouldn't that be something if right before that press conference, Yamamoto one-ups him and takes the deal for the Dodgers or the Yankees? See if we got any comments here. Chris says, I have a feeling that we're going to try to get Cease in a trade or sign someone like Giolito. The Cease thing is looking more and more like it's not going to happen. If you just listen to some of the things that Anthopoulos has said recently, now he could be trying to throw us off, but it's also not a great sign that the Braves have made a couple of trades already with the Chicago White Sox and Cease hasn't been involved. So you do wonder if there's a point where either A, the White Sox asking price has to go way down, or the Braves are just willing to cave and give in. Now, we don't know what they're asking for, but whatever they're asking for, Alex Anthopoulos has not been a fan of at all. And I understand that. If they're trying to raid you in a situation where you know that this team's going nowhere, you feel like you might be able to get them a little cheaper at the deadline. My problem with that whole theory is this. A, you don't have him for the first close to 100 games of the season. B, when you get to the trade deadline, every team that thinks they have a chance to do what Arizona did last year and get hot, or what Philly did the year before, or what the Braves did and win the whole damn thing in 2021, every team that feels like they've got that opportunity, they're all going to come rushing to the window. And so you have to take stock in who you have and who you're willing to give up. And I love the idea of getting a Dylan Cease, but we don't know what they're asking for. I would think Vaughn Grissom is absolutely a part of that discussion, and I don't have a problem with that. But considering the fact that we gutted our farm with a couple of guys who were injured, but we gutted our farm a few weeks ago, you start giving out 3, 4, 5 player trades, you could really be just razor thin in your minors. And we all know it takes more than 26 guys to hoist a flag, to win a division. to get even further. And you can't just absolutely gut your minor league system because you want one guy. So I hope it's not Giolito. I am not a fan of Giolito. I think Giolito, he was basically batting practice. I would rather them sign someone who can go to the post, give us solid innings. Maybe he's not a guy who's going to be overly dominant, but he's going to be a hell of a lot better than Giolito. I mean, I've talked about this before, but I don't know if they're willing to go the 2-3 year route on a couple of these veterans, but a 2-year deal with Seth Lugo or a 2-year deal with Michael Walker makes a lot of sense, as long as you're not paying top dollar. The longer these guys sit out there, you would think the price would go down, but you never know who's going to scoop in there and grab them. There was also a pretty interesting report that came out this morning. The Baltimore Orioles and the Maryland government said that they are in talks and that a new lease is imminent. That's good news for baseball. It's good news for that organization and the fans there. As last thing you want to see is the Baltimore Orioles have to leave. We didn't talk about this before, but this happened several days ago. I guess it was last weekend that the news broke. The Mets' top prospect, Ronnie Mauricio, has torn his ACL. He's done for at least the 2024 season. Now, I don't know how much they were expecting him to contribute in 2024, but when your top prospect tears his ACL, that is never a good sign. Here's another thing that's been going on. Clayton Kershaw has still not told the Dodgers whether he plans on playing in 2024. And their president, Dodgers president, came out and said that they absolutely want him back, and understandably so. Kershaw joked on a radio interview this week, saying essentially the Shohei Ohtani deal makes him want to come back and play. And in the context, you'd have to hear it, but he wasn't 1,000% clear on whether he was talking about the money that's being made or if he's talking about the fact that Ohtani coming back to the team, you know, coming back to the Dodgers. I believe he's going to play, and I think the Dodgers are going to set that money aside. He's not expected to be ready till about halfway through the season. So even if he does come back and play for the Dodgers are going to look at him as the sixth man in their rotation, and they hope to get something out of him. But you're going to have to build a five-man rotation without Clayton Kershaw. And then when he comes back, you know there's a good chance somebody's on the IL and he'll take his spot. And so with all that being said, I do believe they're going to set that money aside. I do believe they are going to bring him back. I think he wants to come back, but he is not. The fact that he has not made that clear this late in the game, I mean, we're damn near at Christmas, and he has still not told them whether or not that he's going to come back or not. Let me see if anything else. What have we got here? Austin Wins signed a major league contract with the Reds. That news just coming in. Looks like a 1-year deal, but we haven't got the numbers on it yet. And oh, never mind. There it goes. Seth Lugo has signed a 2-year contract with the player option for 2026 to the Kansas City Royals. So there you have that. I know I had heard that Seth Lugo and Giolito, who was the other guy? They were all being courted by the Kansas City Royals. I don't think it was Walker. I believe it was someone else, but they got their guy, and the Royals are being kind of low-key aggressive. They've been signing guys. They're building a decent little pitching staff. It'll be interesting to see if they can compete. I still think they're a long ways off, and they may end up trading these guys. But the fact that they gave Seth Lugo a player option on that 2-year contract, he's going to be a lot more difficult to trade. Unless he's having an outstanding year. But you almost think that with a 2-year deal and a 3rd-year option, Royals won't be able to move him till next season. Because not a lot of teams are going to want to pick up a guy 6 months in to a contract that could be a 3-year deal if they weren't someone that they already coveted. Let me see who else we got. Let's see, we got another deal here. Taylor Clark has been acquired from Kansas City in exchange for Ryan Brady and Cam Devaney. That's a minor trade, Royals and Brewers. I believe that's it. And, yeah, that's – so another starting pitcher off the board, Seth Lugo, off the board. Now, they have not released the numbers on it. But I'll be interested to see what Seth Lugo signed for. But he must have felt like that he wasn't getting courted by – because there's no way – and nothing against the Royals organization, but there's no way where they're at in their development that you picked the Royals over an actual contender. Not just the Atlanta Braves, but any team that's out there. So he must not have gotten as much. I'm thinking he was probably getting a lot of one-year offers, and they blew him away with the 2-year and the player option. And let me see. We've got – so they're talking about those matchups. They have – so we talked about this at the top of the hour or – beginning of the show, I guess what I should say. The spring training, they're calling them breakout matches. And basically, if you're just joining us, it's the top 20 to 25 prospects. They will play each other. And they're starting to release the matchups. I don't see the Braves yet, but you've got Baltimore versus Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay versus the Twins, Washington versus the Mets, Seattle versus San Diego, and the Reds versus the Rangers. We ought to know more about this by next week, I would think, and we'll get you updated on that as soon as we get all that in. Other than that, there's just minor things that have happened, things like Clutch Sports Group, which they are the folks that I believe they have LeBron James and a couple other NBA players. They announced that they picked up Rafael Devers, Devin Williams, and Andres Jimenez as their clients. Devers, not a big deal. Devers already signed his big deal, so they're not going to get their chunk out of that. But Devin Williams is a nice little get for them. And other than that, I believe it's going to about wrap it up here. We do want to double check one more outlet to make sure we haven't got any breaking news. As if you're just joining us, Seth Lugo to the Kansas City Royals, so you can take him off the list. And if you're wondering, like, who does that leave? As far as for the Braves and the pitchers that are out there, you're talking about guys who have not signed. Now, I'm not talking about trade because there's a ton of guys out there that we could go trade-wise. But guys who have not signed that are out there for the pickings, you've got certain guys that I do believe the Braves are still kicking the tires. And there's, look, if you look at some of the things they did, like the fact that they took David Fletcher off the roster, and people who are wondering why they did that, they're seeing if there's any interest in him. And if someone comes up and scoops up his salary, they'll essentially let him have him and figure that out down the road. But if not, it gives them more flexibility when we get closer to the season. To keep him off the roster, they can always add him to the 40-man and the 26. If he's on the Braves roster, come opening day, the plan is to have David Fletcher on our 26-man. But a lot of teams aren't willing to go and make a scoop like that at this time of the year because you haven't figured out where all your dollars are going. So they're sneaking them through the waiver system to give themselves more flexibility. So that's the real reason. And he is expected to make it through the system. But you're getting some big names that are coming off the list right now. And looking at the available free agents in the pitching staff, you still have Marcus Stroman sitting out there, By the way, you know, I keep hearing so many different folks out there that are hinting that a team like the Boston Red Sox, a couple other teams are out there, could be signing Joey Votto. It is going to be so weird to see Joey Votto in a uniform that is not the Cincinnati Reds. Ryu is still out there. We talked about Kershaw. Alex Wood is still out there. Sean Manaea, probably not going to get signed. Giolito. They keep saying his market value is $11.8 million. $11.8 million. I just don't see that. Why the hell would you pay Lucas Giolito $11.8 million and he's 29? Almost, he'll be 30. So is he going to be looking for a long-term deal, or is he going to be a one? If he's a one-and-done guy, I don't have a problem with signing Giolito, because he's got to go out there and prove it. You're not going to re-sign him anyways, and away you go. Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, those are the next two big fish to fall. And once they get going, then you're going to open up a lot of talk about some of these older veterans that, you know, once again, they say Paxton, James Paxton, his value, market value is $9.3 million. He did pitch well last year. I just don't know how many years he can expect coming at 35 years old. Zach Greinke, by the way, did announce that he is in the market to pitch. So we'll see if someone signs Zach Greinke. He is going to be 41 years old next season. I don't see anybody signing Rich Hill to his market value at $9 million. That one right there is absolutely ridiculous. And Flaherty's still out there. I think you're going to see some of these guys like Flaherty and possibly even Waka and Giolito. I think those guys are going to be out there until January, because you're going to wait for the bigger fish to fall, and then they're going to have to start either A, accepting the fact that they're going to get a one-year prove-it deal, or B, if they want a multi-year deal, they're going to have to dial it back. They're going to have to figure out, all right, if I want a multi-year deal, I've got to bring my AAV down, because these guys just simply are not worth that kind of an investment. You're taking a huge risk that a guy's going to push back time when he hasn't looked that great. You know, I would rather take a flyer on like a Chris Flexen. I would rather take a flyer on any number of guys who could. And can we talk about the fact that nobody, and I mean nobody, is talking to Trevor Bauer? The whole thing about Trevor Bauer makes zero sense. It came out that the whole story, all the accusations were fabricated. So he did his time. Then the arbitrator said, your suspension was way too long. They lifted it. No one claimed him off waivers last year. And now he is free to sign with whoever he wants. He'll be 33 years old at opening day. He's posted some good numbers. And nobody is willing to get... I guarantee you Trevor Bauer would come in. Man, you know Trevor Bauer would jump at the opportunity to pitch for the Atlanta Braves on a one-year prove-it deal. You know he would. He'd probably even give you a pretty reasonable player option with a very short buyout. So a one-year and a player option. And nobody's giving him a chance? Nobody? It doesn't make any sense. It makes zero sense that nobody is going to give Trevor Bauer a shot. You can't make me believe he wouldn't be worth whatever the hell. I mean, you're talking about bringing in a guy probably in between around $5 million. I would think that would be the absolute ceiling of what he would be asking for. Because he just wants an opportunity to reset his market and everybody to forget about the fact that he was accused of something. Evidently, it was a bunch of hooey. All right, we're going to go ahead and jam out of here. Y'all have a great day. We'll be back here on Braves Country. Hot Stove, we'll be doing this again. Monday, 4 Eastern, we'll go live Monday and Thursday. Now, remember, Christmas and New Year's week. We won't have a Monday show for obvious reasons because Christmas and New Year's Day fall on Mondays this year. For those listening on the podcast, next we have the Pick'em segment, NFL, and we even got a college line for you. Stay tuned. And go Braves! Man, I mean, can we go get some Trevor Bauer? What the hell?
Armchair.
There's something, I'll say there's something kind of about a kid that's never played baseball.
We have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, and flat out deceived.
Why did you get so drunk?
You got drunk. I'm just really exhausted.
What's in that cup?
I'm a Coke.
Do you have any idea how important
you
this is?
Have
trying to save
idea?
The
pump.
Really, this is
you
what you're doing?
Any
this
idea?
Is what you're doing?
Chief, what do you want to do tonight?
Same thing we do every night. Try to take over the world.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Armchair.
YouTube Live.
Radio Station.
The radio station you can call your own. What listeners like about our station?
I like everything. It's always on my radio.
We never stop the music, except for now, when I talk.
You're listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. We're here live weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern, WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key. And simulcasting on YouTube.com/@Braves Country. Your first choice for Southern sports. Hi, I'm Mac McGee, and I don't know much, but I know one thing. We got three games on Saturday in the NFL, a full slate on Sunday, and to top it off, Eagles-Seahawks on Monday night. Now it's
armchair.
NFL season.
Community Access Channel.
He's the armchair quarterback. He's full of beer and he's full of snacks. The All-American man.
With a cool one in his head.
Yeah, the armchair. Yeah, howdy, hi, and how the hell are you? Hope y'all are having a great day. We are going to get into our picks today. We gave you the pick yesterday, so we're going to end up doing a total, I believe it's 9 that I have picked out, including the one from last night. And we're going to get rolling into that here in a bit. We're going to talk a little bit about the injury issues that are going on. Justin Jefferson says he's going to play, so we're going to go with that theory. His coach says he has a good chance to play. Justin Jefferson says he will play. So we'll see how that plays out. But we're going to go under the assumption that Justin Jefferson will be out there. And, you know, I was looking at this a little earlier. Did you know Nick Mullins has started or has played in 17 NFL games where he's taken 70% or more of the snaps in his NFL career? So essentially, he's played a full season in the National Football League. It hasn't all been at once. He's been a backup his whole career, but all in all, he has put in the work of what you can consider 17 full games. And in those games, Nick Mullins has averaged over 268 yards and 1.5 touchdown passes per game. It's pretty good. Pretty good. And also, I believe Jake Browning is playing very well. And I think this game is going to be a little higher scoring than what the experts think. Right now, the over-under is 40.5. And that's where we are going on our first game here on the locks of the week. By the way, heading into this week, we are 48-29-2. So we've got our head above that 60% mark. You love that. You love that. Believe it, right now it's playing at, it's around 64-65%, somewhere in that neighborhood. So very proud of that mark for the year. And Now, granted, these were locks that also had college football involved earlier in the year, but we go pretty heavy when college football ends. We start giving it to you. Next season, I believe we're going to do a lot more picks every week, so it'll be a much bigger pool to pick from. Now, with sports betting being legalized in the state of Florida, you got the HR Bet app that is now legalized, and it looks like there are going to be a couple others that will appear in the next several months. So I believe we're going to do a lot more of our picks, and our football content will be much more focused on that. But this year, Vikings-Bengals, that's my first pick of the week. I'm going to take the over. 40.5 just to me seems low. I think this is going to be a fairly high-scoring game. Cincinnati's a 3-point favorite. I don't love that line one way or the other. I think this is going to come down to one possession on both sides, and you could very easily see the Bengals or the Vikings winning by a field goal. But what I do feel good about is I believe these two teams are going to put some points up, and we're expecting pretty good weather there. As of right now, the AccuWeather forecast has it at 40 degrees and very light winds. And that is a recipe for good football weather. Granted, we got two backup quarterbacks. This is not the Kirk Cousins versus Joe Burrow one would have envisioned way back several weeks ago. And if it were Cousins versus Burrow, you got to figure the over-under would be up over 50. So the two quarterbacks not being in there have dropped it all the way down to 40.5. I actually saw one book. It's just not one that I can play off of. So I'm only going forward, the only lines we're going to be using are the HR Bet lines until something else opens up here in Florida and we get something that plays with that. But as of right now, we're going off the HR Bet casino book lines. And those are being generated by Caesars. So your book's probably very similar, if not exactly the same. But I did see one that was as low as 39.5. To think about the fact, and I went back and looked at the numbers, had the two quarterbacks been healthy for this game, the projected line was 51.5. So you're talking about a 12-point swing, and I understand why the swing is that wide. It's because you got two of the most prolific quarterbacks in all the NFL not playing in the game. But you're still talking about a very low-scoring game in very good weather. You still have elite receivers. It looks like Jefferson's going to play. You still got all the receivers for the Bengals as well. It's a very talented offensive output. And these are two defenses that aren't necessarily... Don't let the Vikings shutting down the Raiders last week confuse you. That was just an awful, awful football game. You have to throw that out and put it off to the side. So that's the first pick of the slate. We're going to take it. We're going to take Vikings versus Bengals. All right. Game number two on tomorrow's slate. You got the Steelers at the Colts. The Colts are a 1.5-point favorite. Your money line is -130. It's a very low money line. And you know our rule here. We won't give you a money line that is over 150. We just don't think it's genuine enough. In other words, we're not going to be one of these damn clown shows that I see all the time on major networks, where they go over to the guys and say, all right, who you think's going to win? Georgia is at home against Chattanooga State. Who do you think is going to win? And they'll say, oh, I think Georgia's going to win. And then they give themselves credit for the win. No one gives a damn if you think a heavily favored team is going to win a game. What they care about is can they make money off of it. So this one's low enough to where you don't have to mess with the line. You can just grab the money line. I believe this is going to be a fairly low-scoring game. If I was leaning in a direction, I would probably actually go with the under in this game. It's 42.5, and the Steelers' defense is going to put pressure on Minshew and company. You know, you already don't have Jonathan Taylor in the game, and Mitch Trubisky has been a disaster, and the Colts' defense will play good enough. I think the Colts' defense will play just enough above the board to get themselves a W at home and keep their playoff hopes alive. Steelers, by the way, how crazy is this? Vikings, Bengals, Steelers, Colts, all four teams that are squaring off in the early window, they're all 7-6. Every last one of them. And what's even crazier is that the fifth team playing on Saturday, the Broncos, they're 7-6. So there's going to be a lot of movement in the playoff picture at the end of Saturday's results. The Broncos are at the Lions on Saturday night. So the first game, Vikings-Bengals, 1 o'clock. Second game, Steelers-Colts, 4:30. And 8:15, game number 3, Broncos and Lions. Those are all on the NFL Network. We were going to do a play-by-play game. We're not going to do it this week. Got some things that came up, and we're trying to get ready for next week because next Saturday, the Steelers and the Bengals are playing at 4:30, and we were going to do that game, and I wanted to make sure that I could do that game, so I got to get some stuff done this Saturday if I'm going to be able to do that. So we're punting this week on a play-by-play cast, and next week we will have it on Braves Country Radio. We'll have it on our YouTube channel. We'll have it on our Facebook channel, and that's the story of that. So Broncos, Lions, over under 47.5. The Lions are favored by -4.5. So Broncos getting 4.5, right? And I think this is an excellent opportunity to grab yourself a teaser on the late night action. So give me the Broncos +10.5 and the over 41.5. These two teams should put up some points, and I don't believe the Lions are going to blow out the Broncos. I understand that it's in Detroit, but the Broncos have been playing pretty damn good football. And I believe Russell Wilson and the Broncos, who are nothing like they looked last year, I think they're going to play good enough football to stay in this game. I do believe Detroit's going to win this game. But if you're going to give me 10.5 points on a teaser, and then I just have to get to 42 to break the over, I'm all over this all day long. So give me the Broncos, give me the over, and that is your Saturday action as we kick off what should be a great weekend of the NFL. And honestly, if you're looking at other things to watch this coming weekend, you do have, I know it's well under the radar, but you do have some bowl games this Saturday as well. There are, let's see, there's five. Is that right? Is it five or six? One, two, three, four, five. There's six. Or is that seven? They got seven games? Yeah, there's seven games. Most of them are snorefests. But we're going to go ahead and grab a couple and talk about them. The bowl games that are going to be going down on Saturday. It starts at 11 a.m. It's Georgia Southern and Ohio. At noon, Howard versus FAMU. Now, for whatever reason, I'm not seeing a line on that Howard versus FAMU game. If you get a reasonable line, FAMU should roll them. At 2:15, Jacksonville State against Louisiana. At 3:30, it's Miami versus Appalachian State in the Avocados Bowl. The Louisiana-Jacksonville State game, that's the RL Carriers Bowl. Howard-Florida A&M is the Cricket Celebration Bowl. And Myrtle Beach Bowl is the 11 a.m. kickoff. Then you start getting some reasonably interesting games. 5:45, New Mexico State, Fresno State in the New Mexico Bowl. Well, that just seems slanted as hell. But New Mexico, 3.5-point favorite. Fresno State over under 51.5. And then that night, if you're not intrigued by the NFL, though I think it's a pretty decent slate, UCLA, Boise State, in the Starco Brands Los Angeles Bowl, we'll just call it the LA Bowl, UCLA hosting Boise State. Boise State is getting 4 points against UCLA, and that is our next pick. I'm going to go ahead and take Boise State plus 4 against UCLA. Boise State's going to come down. They're going to have their fans coming down. There's going to be a lot of fun. Go down there and visit Southern California for the holidays, right? UCLA's going to, walk across the street? So I just don't think they're going to be particularly enthused to play in this bowl game. And I think you're going to get a lifeless performance, and that's why I'm going with Boise State. 9:15 Cal. I was shocked when I saw Cal actually made it to a bowl game. Cal versus Texas Tech, who is also 6-6. That is in the Independence Bowl in Shreveport, Louisiana. Of course, that bowl has been around for quite some time. I can remember many great games in the Independence Bowl in Shreveport. But that is your college football slate. The only game that I have interest as far as laying down is going to be Boise State getting 4. I like that all day long. Okay, let's take a really quick break. When we come back, we've got the rest of the National Football League and our picks, over unders, teasers, picks against the spread. We'll be back in a flash. Brand new for the 2024 Braves Country Radio broadcast season, along with pitch-by-pitch, play-by-play, the classic call of Braves Country Baseball, we will bring you a live pregame show and postgame show. The phone lines wide open for you to call, react, or ask your questions along with the chat. That's Braves Country Today pregame, Braves Country Tonight postgame. We'll see you in 2024. I can catch the moon in my hand. Don't you know who I am? Remember my name. Welcome back. I'm gonna learn how to fly. NFL week number. That's hard to believe. Week 15 already. The season goes by so fast. I always feel that about the football season and the baseball season. Baseball season's a little longer, and you're playing every day, so it doesn't seem to go by as fast. But it always seems like when you get to the end, you're like, damn, is that all? And then conversely, the NBA and the hockey season seem to drag on. And you're like, my God, you're already playing? Kids are out trick-or-treating, and then I'm going to still have you on my television come June? The NFL winding down. We know who the real contenders and real pretenders are. And there's still a couple that are pretenders that are still fighting their way, and good for them. They're staying alive. Teams like the Browns, who aren't getting great quarterback play after the injury to Deshaun Watson, and then they sign Joe Flacco off the street, and he's out there balling. And the Browns are going to be hosting Justin Fields and the Bears. This is an interesting game on a lot of fronts, but mainly because, to me, it's the over-under that I'm looking at more than anything else. And it's one where, if you're looking at the team total overs, it is 20.5 for the Bears, or excuse me, 20.5 for the Browns, and 17.5 for the Bears. There are some lines that are heavy at 21 for the Browns. And I believe both teams are going to put up some points. The over-under is 38.5. I've been going back and forth on which one do I like the most. The one thing that I'm a little leery of on this one, so we might circle back to it, but I'm going to punt this one for the time being because I've gotten conflicting stories on what the wind is going to be like in Cleveland. And if they're going to get bad wind, it always affects the game, especially in Cleveland. It comes ripping off the lake. If the wind is low, if it's a low wind, you're talking about a high of 42. That's pretty good football weather. And if that's the case, I'm going to be all about the over. Flacco, I don't know where the hell it came from, but he's looked fabulous for the first couple of weeks he's played. Justin Fields is healthy, and when he's healthy, I think he's one of the more dangerous quarterbacks in the NFL. He's not one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. I'll never say that because he's extremely inaccurate when he throws the ball. But when you add his ability to run along with a rocket for an arm, he becomes a problem for defenses. So we may circle back to this, but right now I'm going to punt the Bears-Browns game. Same thing going on, Bucks-Packers. I do believe Green Bay, this is a must-win game. They're going to have to find a way to bounce back. It's usually tough when you play that Monday night game to turn around and have to win, but this time of year, there are no excuses. If this game were being played in week 3 or 4, I would tell you to take the Bucks and the points. But because everyone gets dialed up just a little more this time of year, the Packers know how serious this game is for them. Packers lose this game, their season could all but be over. And a lot of it will have to do, and they'll know by kickoff. But what if the Vikings win? They'll be sitting there at 8-6. Packers drop to 6-8. It becomes Hail Mary time. So the Packers have got to get that win. But we may come back to that in a second. There's a couple things I want to check on that. I'll do that at the break. Texans-Titans. This game to me is interesting. Right now, the over-under is 37.5. It's very rare that a quarterback plays after a concussion, put in a concussion protocol the next week. But it has happened. It's happened 3 times this year. So C.J. Stroud plays. I love the over. I also think the over will go skyrocketing. If he doesn't play, it's going to be Davis Mills against Will Levis, which sounds like a recipe for a slugfest. But we saw Will Levis look very good on Monday night. He's going to be at home. Pretty good weather. High around 50. And the Titans and Texans have given up some points recently. I think that Tennessee will find a way to gut their way out. So give me the teaser on this one. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to circle back. I'm going to take the over on the Houston-Tennessee game. The teaser will get me down to 30.5. And Green Bay at home gets me now 3.5 on the teaser. And I just believe that the Packers are the better team, but Jordan Love's going to have to prove it. Realize something. That secondary for Tampa Bay has been gutted all year long. I like the Packers' chance to bounce back at home. So give me Green Bay plus 3.5. Give me Tennessee and Houston over 30.5, and that will be my next teaser on this one. The next game that I've got circled, we're going to skip past the Jets-Dolphins. I don't love the spot there. Dolphins, I think, are giving up too many points at 8.5, but I don't love the spot because it's Zach Wilson on the road. What the hell are you going to get? Last time these two teams played, Black Friday game, I actually did the game, and I'll tell you what, the game wasn't even as close as the score indicated, and the score wasn't close. The Dolphins dominated that game. But Miami's going to be coming off a short week. They don't know if they're going to have Tyreek Hill. If they don't have Tyreek Hill, that's a problem for that Dolphins offense. And I think the Jets are still hanging on to hope their Aaron Rodgers could be back next week. Next week is the week, week 16. If he's going to come back, it's next week. That is the end of the IR window. If he does not come back next week and become activated, the Jets could either have a guy activated on the roster that has no shot in hell of playing, or B, the more likely scenario, they would shut him down for the rest of the season. It's a very, very huge week for the Jets. But if the Jets are 5-9, a lot less of a chance that he's going to come back. But he has always said he wants to give it a go, especially if they're in the playoff hunt. If they're 6-8 and hanging around in the playoffs, that Thursday night game in a couple of weeks will be huge. Jets and Browns. All right. The game that I do like, Kansas City is giving up a touchdown. That line keeps going up and down. Right now I'm getting -7. Kansas City -7. The over-under is 37.5. I'm not touching the over-under because I don't know how many points the Patriots are actually going to score. But I do believe the Chiefs will methodically beat them down. It'll be a game of like 26-10. And you'll get away from that game going, wasn't the prettiest thing in the world, but they got it done. This is a must-win game for the Chiefs. The Chiefs have got to be dialed up for this game. They're 8-5. They're not really in danger of not missing the playoffs because they play in such a bad division, but the Chiefs are hoping to sneak their way through a first-round bye. And for them to do that, they've got to get things going here. They drop one more loss, they can probably kiss that goodbye. Chiefs are almost in win every single game mode at this point. But I like the Chiefs to dominate the Patriots. I don't care who they put out there at quarterback for the Patriots. They're not going to move the ball in that Chiefs defense. And Kansas City will score enough points to get it done. Give me the Chiefs minus the touchdown. All right, we've got... So we got a couple more games. Let's go ahead and take that last quick break. When we come back, we'll finish this up. We're going to talk about the Rams game. I've got another teaser for you, along with Monday Night Football. There's an angle I like on that one. We'll be back in a flash. Hey, Braves Country. This is Mac McGee with Braves Country Radio. We are bringing you Pitch by Pitch, play-by-play of your Atlanta Braves all year long. Please like and subscribe today. It's free, and it helps us bring you more of the game we all love. Braves Country Radio, your home for the classic call of Braves Country Baseball. Everyone's about to get a drink in their hand. We got a couple more picks to give you before we jet on out of here. As week number 15 of the National Football League is in front of us. And I've got a total of 4 picks left. If you haven't heard the ones prior to that we gave you today. Vikings in Cincinnati, we're taking the over at 40.5. We're taking Colts money line. Broncos teaser, same game teaser. Broncos will be getting 10.5. The over will shoot down to, or drop down to 41.5. Give me the Titans plus 30.5. Titans Texans total 30.5, and Green Bay getting 3.5. Give me Boise State plus 4 in their bowl game Saturday evening against UCLA. Chiefs, touchdown favorite, give me Kansas City in New England. They're going to romp. And that's where we're at as we head into the final 4 picks for the weekend. We'll start off with our beloved Atlanta Falcons. They're a 3-point favorite. And I see now it's dropped down to 2.5. 2.5, we'll take that all day long. The money line is just above where you want it. It's still sitting at about 155, 160. So we're going to stick with the Falcons -2.5 on the road against the Panthers, the lowly Panthers. And don't get this wrong. The Panthers aren't trying to lose. They don't have their first-round pick because the idiots traded it away to have the rights to Bryce Young. Think about the stupidity of that right now. They could have their pick of the litter right now for whatever quarterback they want. Instead, they traded away. Remember, Chicago has it. Of course, then again, if Bryce Young hadn't been playing quarterback this whole time, and they'd gone with the more of a journeyman veteran, whether it would have been Dalton, who's on their roster, or maybe they make another move, Panthers may not have the worst record. They got the worst record in football because they forced Bryce Young to play much earlier than he was ready for, with a roster that is just rotten. It's just a terrible roster. You've got Adam Thielen. We don't know what Bryce Young is, but we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He hasn't looked great, but I still say you can't throw a rookie quarterback in with no supporting cast and expect wonders. And that's it. If you look at their, yeah, they went out and they signed Miles Sanders. I knew that was going to be a bust from the go. When we do our fantasy football content in the summer, we start talking about the drafts and whatnot. And who to pick, I had him circle as stay away. Miles Sanders is not an every down back, and they paid him like an every down back. He's not even getting the bulk of the carries now. It's Chuba Hubbard, who is a nice little piece. If Chuba Hubbard was on most teams in the National Football League, he'd be probably your first running back off the bench. He'd be the backup. You name the team, Chuba Hubbard's not starting over that guy. But he's a nice little piece to bet. Well, I don't know if he'd be first off the bench in Atlanta. Algier would probably still be, but he could be number three. That's assuming we're not counting Cordell Patterson. But he's a solid. But that tells you what they did with Miles Sanders. What they did in the offseason, and it really is funny that they fired Frank Reich over this. What they did in the offseason, trading up to get Bryce Young, which Frank Reich was against, and spending all that money on Miles Sanders, who's not an every down back. What they did was set that team up for disaster, and then about 8-9 games into the season, they fire Frank Reich and tell him it's his fault, which was absurd. Anyways, I think the Falcons will win. I don't think it'll be pretty, but I do think they'll win by 2.5-3 points. I think you can look at Falcons to go in there. The first game one of the season, a little different story. They win 24-10. I think they'll keep the Panthers down around that same margin, 10 to 13 points, and the Falcons will win. I'll go ahead and call it. Look, give me the Falcons to win this game something like 26 to, we'll give you an oddball number. They'll be going for two and not getting it. 26 to 12. And it won't be pretty, but you'll take the win, especially if the Bucs get the loss up in Green Bay. So give me Atlanta to rock them. All right. This is one of the more interesting games of the day, and it's only for fantasy football purposes. But when you talk fantasy football, you're also talking about offense. Talking about offense, you're talking about, hey, let's get it. This is one of my best teasers. It's my favorite teaser, in-game teaser of the entire weekend. So the Rams are a 6.5-point favorite. If you do just a simple 6-point teaser, I'll give you some 6, I'll give you some 7. But if you do a simple 6-point teaser, you will take that line down to just a win. That's all they got to do is win, baby, right? So the Rams, all they got to do is pull off the win. The over-under in this game is 50.5. Why is it 50.5? Man, that's a high number. Because these two quarterbacks are lighting up the scoreboard. Even when Sam Howell doesn't play well, he lights up the scoreboard because he's turned the ball over, and the Rams are going to feast on this Washington secondary. So give me the Rams to win on the minus 0.5 and the over-under. Give it to me at 44.5. I think this thing goes flying by that number. And so now I got you one more in-game teaser. This will be the last teaser of the weekend. The Buffalo Bills and the Dallas Cowboys. Right now, the number is Buffalo minus 2. Actually, I'm going to switch this up. I'm going to take that number off, and I'm going to go ahead and give me... I was going to do an in-game teaser with this Dallas-Buffalo game, but instead what I'm going to do is I'm going to take Buffalo on a 6-point teaser to take that number up to now Buffalo getting 4. Buffalo getting 4 at home, Orchard Park. against the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys are going to be smelling themselves a little bit. Now, we could get that same situation with Buffalo. Both teams just come off two huge wins. But I don't see Dallas going in and beating Buffalo. I was going to go with a line that I do like in this would be if you take Buffalo and you take the over to 44.5. But I'm gonna play a little more conservatively. I'm going to take Buffalo plus 4. And I'm going to also, now that's 4:25 kickoff. At 4:05 Eastern, the 49ers are at the Cardinals. That line is 12. I'm going to take the 49ers down to 6. All the Niners got to do, and they rolled the Cardinals earlier this year, and I don't believe they were hitting their stride. I really believe the 49ers are really starting to put it together. The Niners, give me the Niners minus 6. All they got to do is get the W. Buffalo Bills will be getting 4. So there you have that. And the Ravens-Jaguars, that's your Sunday night game. I just don't love it. I don't love this game. I'm steering clear of it. If I was going to take it one way or the other, I'd probably be leaning towards Baltimore. But Sunday night in Duval, that can be a tricky spot. So take me to the Monday night game, Eagles-Seahawks. The over-under is 47.5. And I know these night games, a lot of them just have not been hitting the number. I think we're going to get a shootout. I think we're going to get a high-scoring affair. That Eagles secondary is terrible. Give me the over 47.5 Eagles-Seahawks. Monday Night Football, that'll do it for us. Y'all have a great weekend and enjoy it. Because we're getting down to the last few weeks where we actually get football, and then we stare out the window and wait for baseball season. Have a great one. We're going to leave you with a little jam before we get out of here. I love her, she loves me, but I don't fit with society. Lord, have mercy on a boy from down in the boondocks. It's Friday, Working Stiffs. Everybody! 4, 3, 2, 1, happy weekend! Goodbye, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. We're back tomorrow with another show. Well, unless we're fired, we'll talk to you then. Goodbye, sweetheart. Goodbye. Goodbye. Guys and gals, it's time to go. We'll see you on the next show.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Thanks for listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks on 99.1 FM WQEE, The Key in Noonan, Georgia, and simulcasting on youtube.com/@Braves Country. Braves Country comes your way weekdays 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. Please follow, like, and subscribe today. Armchair Quarterback Radio, your first choice for Southern sports. September, something of the 5th of September. She said a lot that I can't remember. Something of the 5th. Can I get another cigarette, please?